This is the Norris Group's Real Estate Investor Radio Show, the award-winning show dedicated to thought leaders shaping the real estate industry and local experts revealing their insider tips to succeed in an ever-changing real estate market. Hosted by author, investor, and hard money lender, Bruce Norris.
On Friday, October 21st, the Norris Group proudly presents its 9th annual award-winning black tie event, I Survived Real Estate. An incredible lineup of industry experts will join Bruce Norris to discuss perplexing industry trends, head-scratching legislation, and opportunities emerging for real estate professionals. Proceeds for the event benefit Make-A-Wish and St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. This event is not possible without the generous help of the following platinum partners: Housing Wire, Property Radar, the Apartment Owners Association, the San Diego Creative Real Estate Investors Association, Invest Club for Women, MVT Productions, the San Jose Real Estate Investors Association, Inland Empire Real Estate Investment Club, Think Realty, and White House Catering. Visit isurvivedrealestate.com for event information and tickets.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris. Our special guest today is Peter Moyo. Peter is the chief economist of auction.com. He's a renowned real estate economist and trusted industry analyst and forecaster. Moyo leads auction.com research. He's the founder of New York-based Maximus Advisors, a widely respected CRE consulting firm that became part of auction.com in 2012. Previously the head of Deutsche Bank Real Estate Research, Moyo and his research team provided a trusted economic barometer that helps guide auction.com's business decisions. Peter, welcome to our show.
Thank you very much. It's good to be here today. Can I just make one correction for you?
Oh, please.
Auction.com rebranded as 10X, same company, just new name, and I just wanted to sort of get that out there, if that was okay with you.
Yeah, and matter of fact, let's talk about that, because it is an expanded concept. So let's talk about 10X. Is that the, let's say, the parent company, and then you have underneath that we have auction.com, and that has residential and commercial?
Correct. The way it works is 10X has the 10X commercial, 10X homes, and then auction.com. And which is also sort of residential bulk sales of homes.
Okay. What's interesting about the company that you really have revolutionized, we're talking about auction.com and 10X, it's really been a revolutionary concept, because when I first met the owner of your company, when he was quite young, holding his first auction, he was auctioning off a group of homes of a friend, a builder that didn't sell. There was a lot of competition that had existed way before he started the auction business. And now you guys are the leader. And that's a very interesting transition to me, because what you guys did was revolutionary, and it took advantage of the changing of how people would buy at auctions. So in the 90s, we attended live auctions in ballrooms, and
right.
And then all of a sudden that started to transition, and now it's been, the transition is, I don't know if it's virtually complete, but it's pretty darn close.
Yeah, it's a very exciting story, and you know, you're referring to Jeff Frieden, who started the company, and you know, he can still do the ballroom auctioneer, you know, voice. And but yet here we are all these years later on an online platform, global reach, commercial and residential real estate, not only distressed real estate of the types that was sort of the stuff that, you know, Jeff was doing when he started, but what I would call everyday real estate, you know, real estate that's owned by investors who are selling to other investors of, you know, all different kinds of size and category, from institutional to sort of mom and pop buyers and sellers. So it has been quite the revolutionary story. It makes it a very exciting place to be.
I can imagine. Just for fun, honestly, I live in California. I'm involved in Leesburg real estate. I bought a tract of lots, building some rentals. I wonder if they have anything commercial in Leesburg. What are the odds? Sure enough, you have a storage place that's up for auction.
Right.
I would never know that auction existed any other way. If it wasn't online, the reach of that auction would be so different than it is today.
Exactly. When you think about it, and we work with a lot of brokers, and I think one of the feedbacks we're getting from a lot of brokers is it expands the potential audience of buyers for the property that they're helping the seller to sell. And it's like you said, it's like you're looking in a specific place in California, but if you, for whatever reason, decided you were looking for someplace elsewhere in the country, you know, and one of the things we're looking at in research is giving the kind of guidance of like, well, what's a market like a market that I'm already buying and selling in, and giving that kind of advice. You know, you can get that kind of exposure, and then when you think about it, internationally as well. And so you can be doing it from any country, any time of the day, any part of the world.
Yeah, it's pretty mind-boggling. Now, if you saw a residential auction for a builder back in the 90s, okay, you go, they didn't sell. So we have some form of maybe great motivation on the other side. And that was that was a given. You see an auction, you go, okay, this is going to be a deal, and we have a motivated seller, and they're under the gun. Has that opinion changed? Now, the reality may be changed. The seller may be a very different person, but is the buyer still of that mentality that they're choosing auction? There must be an issue.
I think it's changing. I don't think it's fully changed. And one of the things that's actually very interesting, and one of the things that came along, you know, coincident with the rebranding to 10X, was it's no, the options for buying and selling on the platform are no longer purely just auction. You actually have two different types of auctions you can choose from if you're the seller, or we have a program called Offer Select, which really looks and feels a lot like the traditional way of selling non-distressed real estate. So you have the seller, puts up the information, he gets, you know, people who are potential bidders, indications of interest, you know, communications back and forth between seller and buyer. It's not within, you know, a certain period of time and, you know, then going, gone, you know, gavel comes down. The timing of it is all determined by the seller, how long he wants to have it out there, how many buyers he, like, limits it to based on their initial indications of interest. And then he gives them information in terms of, well, you know, we're looking more for this versus that, et cetera, et cetera. So I think this process is taking place. And so part of the rebranding, I think, was to abet this process of just because it's on auction doesn't mean it's a distressed property. We still do a lot of work with the big special servicers, you know, L&R and CW, with properties that they are disposing of as, you know, for the trust that they're working for. But the percentages of other types of assets, like I said, everyday real estate, non-distressed real estate, is growing consistently over time. And I think as that's happening, that perception of if it's on auction or something wrong with it is continuing to diminish.
You mentioned two different type of auctions. Did I hear that right?
Yeah, there's... And I now, like, this is, I'm not the marketing guy here, the business development guy
okay.
here. But one is a pure auction. And if you give me a second, I'm actually going to just pull up the actual names of it so that I can give you the proper information. So hold on. I have a little cheat sheet here on this. One of them is called Live Bid and one is called Managed Bid. The Managed Bid, as it suggests, is more controlled, if you will, in terms of who the bidder pool is and things like that. So there's just like variations on what type of auction that the seller can choose from.
Are they, or just one other question, are they all reserve auctions?
Yes.
Okay. All right. What percentage of commercial properties choose the auction route, would you say?
Of the commercial properties versus residential? What do you mean by that? I misunderstood it.
No, it's okay. Just let's say you have 100 commercial listings. Which of those have chosen to go the auction route as far as selling, and which have chosen just the normal?
Okay, yeah. No, I think it's still dominated by the auction. I don't have the actual percentages, so I don't want to make up numbers. Offer Select was launched in March. But interestingly, and this is pretty anecdotal, I get emails as each property is going up on the system. What I'm seeing is more and more of them are saying offer select versus an auction. So it seems that the offer select process really is picking up some significant steam over the, what are we, like 5 months since it started.
Okay. Commercial property, has it outpaced in its, let's say, its way back from the downturn? Is it outpaced residential? Is it done better?
It's, you know, this is the story I like to tell on commercial property, is that there's not one cycle. So I would say, if you look at each of the property segments, they've each progressed at a different pace. So the answer to your question would be, yes, the apartment cycle has outpaced the residential cycle, the single-family residential cycle. The hotel cycle has outpaced the single-family residential cycle. But the office and retail segments have been slower than single-family residential, and I'd put industrial somewhere probably on the same kind of timing that's been happening with single family.
Now, the apartments, let's just, you know, try to figure out why this might occur. You have all these people lose their home in foreclosure, become incapable of being able to be a buyer for a while. They would become renters. And that would, to me, that would seem like that would be an increased demand for a certain period of time.
That's correct. So what we've seen is a sharp drop in the home ownership rate from almost 70% to below 64% in the 63% range, to levels we haven't seen in more than 4 or 5 decades. And every 1 percentage point drop in the home ownership rate is about 1.2 million households shifting from owning a home to renting a home. And that's why the apartment segment could have such a fast and furious recovery compared to the other property segments in commercial and compared to single family homes, because even though the early parts of this economic expansion were, you know, notably weak and sawtoothed, the decline, the shift of people into rental properties was so massive that it generated this sharp increase in demand. Coming out of the recession and the financial crisis, of course, there wasn't a lot of development taking place. And so, you know, the juxtaposition of strong demand and very limited new supply brought vacancies rates down very quickly from near 9% to near 4% over the course of a few years.
One of the early talks I did in this year, I usually speak to the Apartment Owners Association, normally have pretty good crowd, 400. We had 650 people standing on the wall. And I said, okay, you guys are either one of two things. You're either really excited or you're really afraid. And somebody and somebody made the comment, do you think this segment of the industry is overpriced? Do we have a bubble? And I thought about it for a second. I said, well, let me ask you a question. Would you buy your apartment building at its current valuation? And honestly, the whole place laughed. And I went, wow. I said, that's the sign of a bubble. So let me ask you, do you think in that segment, do we have a pricing issue that could be a problem going forward?
I think that this cycle, the apartment segment is in the late cycle. So what we've been forecasting for quite some time now, and it's turned out to be transpiring, is increases in vacancy rates, slowdown in rents, and as a result, up ahead, potentially some weakness in valuations. Now, and it's all because we've sort of now seen the reverse of what I was referring to earlier, strong demand and limited supply. We still actually have strong demand. Demand has remained very healthy for the apartment segment. What's changed is we've had significant increases in development activity. Some markets particularly stand out in that kind of way. And what that's doing now is, it's a digestion issue. Even with healthy demand, supply is too great to meet all that supply. So vacancies moving up, you know, rents weakening. It's a late inning story for the apartment segment. And so if you think about it from, say, a market NOI perspective, our view is that weakens. Right now it's really being driven by rent increases. As occupancies have started to decline, as vacancies have started to rise on the national level and in many markets, And, you know, so right now valuations have held up, but that's because cap rates have been assisted by the continued decline in treasuries to the surprise of many, many market participants.
Okay. So going forward, let's just pick a time frame. 5 years from now, do you feel that the interest rates will be higher or lower than where they are?
I think they'll be higher than where they are.
Okay. So that would put pressure on the cap rate and lower the valuation. Okay.
Yeah, right. One of the things we look at across the property segments is cap rate spreads to treasuries. Also, we also call it the risk premium. And not surprisingly, given the different pace of fundamentals change and therefore the degree to which investors have piled into, to greater or lesser degrees, different property segments, that cap rate spread for apartment properties is narrower. And so the way I like to look at that is that gives you less comfort room or wiggle room for when interest rates do start to rise for cap rate spread declines or risk premium declines to mask the impact of rising interest rates. So it makes the apartment segment more vulnerable to that than, say, office or retail or even industrial.
Okay. So right now we have approximately a 1.5, 1.6 10-year. We have unemployment at something around 4.8, so that's almost considered full employment, and we have 1% GDP growth. So I guess I'm looking at the sovereign debt of the world, 30% of being in negative territory. It looks to me like we're fighting deflation instead of worried about inflation. So what's going to occur in the next 5 years that says we got to raise interest rates?
Well, you know, it's very interesting. In fact, I had some discussions with that with some of the members of my team just this morning, because we actually, in December, we put out every half year we put out, you know, what to look for in the next 6 months. And one of the things that we said in December is the Fed's not going to be as fast to tighten as everyone thinks they are. And indeed, as you said, they haven't done anything since last December. So we were certainly right on that call. And the debate is this. I agree with you. There is no inflation or not yet any threat of inflation on the horizon. And to my way of thinking, the Fed tightening will be more as a means to rearm their toolbox or to rebuild their toolbox, giving them more wiggle room in the event of other negative events in the future with which then to ease. Because right now, if something were to happen, they don't have a lot of firepower.
Right.
And so it's not so much that I don't think, and especially Janet Yellen, I think, you know, there's even, you know, some talk that, you know, they're out in Jackson Hole now for the annual meeting of the Fed governors and the Fed chairman. And there's some talk even that they'll take, you know, inflation and make it less of a, or ask for it to be made less of a target for what the Fed should be doing than it has been. Because right now it's that versus unemployment or versus employment. And but I really do think that they are sort of itching to put themselves in a position where if they need to, they have an arsenal to fight, you know, a negative event.
Okay, that's why I use the time frame of 5 years and not 12 months, because I think whatever they do is immaterial in 12 months, because I think they're going to have to take it back if we have a recession. So what's interesting about if you have a recession, I'm honestly feeling like you might have a 10-year T-bill that says one, period. So if that occurred, your cap rates, you know, your valuations could actually probably go up. Just my own theory.
Yeah, well, no, I mean, I don't think you're wrong on that. See, we've done some, you know, as we've looked at it, and it's a hard thing to actually get like hard, fast numbers on, but to the best of our ability, you know, what I would say is when you look at cap rate movements historically, about 50% of the movement is driven by interest rates, about 50% is driven by real estate-specific events, right, where real estate would be both fundamentals and then capital flows, and that can be, you know, capital flows into real estate versus other assets, or just broadly capital flows, and are they strong or are they weak? So if you have a downturn, a recession, and you therefore have no pressure on interest rates to rise or have interest rates going, you know, going south again, that certainly is the potential to bring cap rates down. The flip side of that is that there will be a, or there's likely to be, decreased capital flows into real estate fundamentals beginning to deteriorate, and therefore that other quote-unquote 50% of the movement in cap rates could be moving in the other direction. So it leads you in a sort of like no man's land of you could stay where you are, you could go up a little, you could go down a little, but I don't think you'd see anything dramatic one way or the other.
Okay. We've only got a little less than 3 minutes. I really enjoyed this conversation.
Wow, that went fast.
It does, yeah. Okay, major sea changes. So auction.com was really part of, to me, revolutionizing something. If I'm in the hotel business, I don't like that the Airbnb showed up. Online shopping to retail. So looking out in the future, you know, with robotics and 3D printing and all that, do you see coming sea changes that will affect this commercial real estate world?
Yes. And, you know, you mentioned two of them. The third is decreased use of office space for 1,000 reasons, having to do with various elements of technology stemming from, you know, not just the movement from enclosed offices to cubicles to, you know, sort of a Google desk setup, but even to the fact that now we have a laptop that we carry around with us and can stick on any desk so we can sort of hotel people within the office. And the fact that we're all on the cloud, and therefore we can be working from anywhere and not necessarily an office. So you don't need as much office space per worker. So that, in addition to Airbnb, in addition to e-retail, of course, the flip side of that is the one property segment that's benefiting from these from technological changes is the industrial warehouse sector as a result of the need for distribution and fulfillment space for not only e-retailers, but for better competitive response by bricks and mortar retailers as well. And that's been one of the things, reasons why so far the industrial segment demand has held up as well as it has, even amidst low oil and its impact on that part of the manufacturing and mining sector, as well as the weakness in many of the countries abroad and the slowdown in trade that's occurred along with that. So we think, just to keep your question going, is that we do think that these, I like to call them their secular headwinds for real estate, you know, talking about Airbnb, talking about e-retail, talking about less office space, those are not going away. They're going to be continued factors why you can't necessarily look back at time and say for every office job or for every dollar spent on retail goods that will necessarily have the same degree of demand response for commercial property.
Yeah, we're out of time almost, but I think the same thing is coming to college campuses because you could have the greatest history teacher in the world teach a million students at a time. You know,
yeah, MOOCs and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, and do away with college debt pretty easily. So if they want to do that, that's but that changes the game for a lot of people. We really
in
have,
some ways.
Go ahead.
Okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead. No, I was going to say in some ways it's like the end of social interaction in that we don't need to be in an office, we don't need to shop in a store, we don't need to go to a hotel, we don't need to be in a college campus to do all the various things that used to get done in those places.
Exactly. Yeah, those are big sea changes coming. Really enjoyed our time together. This has been Peter Moyo. He's the chief economist for 10X. And look forward to talking to you again sometime.
Yes, that was great. Thank you very much.
All right, Peter, thanks.
The Norris Group would like to thank its gold sponsors for supporting I Survived Real Estate, Auction.com, Coachella Valley Real Estate Investors Association, Coldwell Banker Town & Country, Elite Auctions, Inland Valley Association of Realtors, Jennifer Buys Houses, Keller Williams Corona, Keystone CPA, Las Brisas Escrow, LA South Rhea, New Western, North San Diego Real Estate Investors, Northern California Real Estate Investors Association, Orange County Investment Club, Orange County Building Industry Association, Pacific Premier Bank, Pasadena Phoebe, Pilot Limousine, Real Wealth Network, Realty 411 Magazine, Realty Executives Inland Empire, Rick and Leanne Rossiter, Sunoco Corporation, South Orange County Real Estate Club, Spinnaker Loans, UDirect IRA Services, Weston South Coast Plaza, Wholesale Capital Corporation, Wilson Investment Properties, Inc., See iSurvivedRealEstate.com for sponsor links and event information.
For more information on hard money loans and upcoming events with the Norris Group, check out thenorrisgroup.com. For information on passive investing with trust deeds, visit tngtrustdeeds.com.